Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have the co-founder of Y-Wallet and LesionPay, Andrew. How's it going today?
I'm doing great. I'm great, Richard. Thank you. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the show.
Yeah, awesome. Great to have you on the show. To kick off, we could get a bit of background about yourself and the businesses that you're in.
Sure. So I'm originally from the UK. I was working for quite a large, back then it was quite a large fintech company, Canadian-based, mainly in the payments area. We were working with gift cards and prepaid cards for some serious clients, McDonald's, the Dorchester Group of Hotels, Nike, for example. From there, I kind of learned a bit more about payments and I got some good contacts from it. And I came to Cyprus in 2014. Continue my career with payments, mainly in the high risk from this point on. Obviously, Cyprus is mainly Forex, you know, this kind of stuff. And then we decided, look, it's a case of let's build something out of this. So we incorporated Y-Wallet, which is an online banking platform. And we kind of went from there. You know, that's the background for us. Fintech entrepreneur, I suppose you could say. Some successes in it.
Cool. And I mean, just saying that for a sec, with Y-Wallet, what exact problem are you guys solving?
When I came to Cyprus, like I said, we started to work with the Forex brokers.
Yeah.
And our issue that we found was, okay, we could very easily find solutions regarding payment methods, you know, via card acquiring or, you know, APMs. The issue for us, Richard, and for our merchants, was the settlements. So these guys, like I said, they could acquire the funds, but the issue for them was banking, whether it was virtual banking or traditional banking. There was always this, you know, black hole in terms of how we move forward with it. So our idea, our ethos was, okay, look, we're doing okay in this space, but how do we add some value to the process? So we incorporated Y-Wallet, and the reason and the services Y-Wallet is providing to these guys is essentially online banking. So the guys at the end of the month, they've got their funds acquired by the PSPs, and rather than have those funds rolling over for months and months and months trying to find solutions for settlements, we issue them a virtual IBAN in their company name, and they settle the funds that way. So we've kind of, you know, filled up the space there.
Oh, awesome. So you came up with a pretty cool solution to a problem. But how did you, you know, going back a few years, how did you actually approach market entry and also creating that sort of product awareness in the market?
The solution of virtual IBAN isn't anything new. I mean, this company's doing it for a very, very long time. Yeah. The way we did it regarding our niche was we only worked with high-risk industries, obviously regulated and licensed. But we, our marketing strategy was, you know, we already have these clients in terms of our niche of the payments areas. And we wanted to be able to go directly to these guys. So already by the time we launched Y-Wallet, we already had around, you know, 1,500 clients, something like this, on the payment space. So we approached these guys with this final solution. Regarding how we, you know, we market our product, it's mainly from referrals. I mean, we don't really have any social media in terms of, you know, real social media. A lot of our marketing comes from affiliates or referrals or introductions to our clients. Other than that, we already had our client base already from being based in Cyprus. We had a local presence here. So when clients wanted to speak to us or have any new solutions, we had an open office situation where clients could come and see us whenever they needed to, come and call us. And we built quite a friendly environment around it. And I think our name came out that way.
Awesome. So, you know, the good old word of mouth and meeting people face to face and actually doing business in that way. Because, I mean, you know, a lot of my guests, they go into a lot of detail and do a lot of work in and around social media. So it's good to hear that in some aspects, the traditional way is also still successful.
For sure. And I think, again, it comes down to trust, Richard. You know, I think it's a case of you can market to market to market. But if you're kind of throwing the seeds in the pond and hoping for the fish to bite, you're kind of, you know, you're not building your direct market. For us, we kind of try to build on the trust and put a lot of expectation towards our clients of, you know, we are very customer focused, which we are. And again, you know, as we work with affiliates and referrers, it doesn't make it much easier for us. We're building on, you know, the trust of the affiliates already.
You mentioned focus there. And, you know, being an entrepreneur and being in the fintech world for the last few years, how have you guys maintained your focus and maintained that customer centric view?
In the industry, in the payments industry, it can be very, very difficult to continuously be ahead of the game in terms of what's going on. The way we focus is we make sure that we understand exactly what the client is knowing and the client needs and what they know is coming from their side. So it's very, very easy for us to be a provider, but we maintain a very, very strong focus of our clients regarding where are they going and how they're doing things. So for example, let's say we have a Forex brokerage. They're the ones processing their funds and they're the ones within their market directly. We're just a provider to them, Richard. So we don't really know what's going on in the back office from their side. Mm. We will always talk with them and meet with them and see what's in the future for them. And it maintains our focus for our sales team as well, because they have a direct contact, let's say in the trenches, who allows them to understand, look, this is going to happen soon, or this regulation is changing, or Visa or MasterCard are making these decisions. Mm. We can always kind of be one step ahead with this.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, as you grow, as you scale, I mean, you mentioned there's a lot of things going on in the payment space, but how do you guys make certain that when you go to the next level, that your core business sort of stays intact? And if you need to do additional stuff, like maybe new products or go to new geographies, that's also maybe part of the mix, but maybe to a lesser extent.
Sure. So whenever we add new products, obviously we have a research team that goes through what we're doing, how we do it, and the regulation required behind it. But in terms of the growth, it's not like, you know, where beforehand you could just do service very, very quickly. Mm. There's a lot of, you know, detail that goes involved. So for example, with WireWallet, we only offer a certain type of IBAN, which is a SEPA IBAN. We're never going to migrate away from that. That's what WireWallet does. And it's the same way, you know, if we can introduce Legion Pay, our new project, same thing with Legion Pay. So, you know, we could have many, many different services with Legion Pay. You know, we could add multiple payment methods, but we always decide, look, we're going to be doing card acquiring services, which is Visa and MasterCard card acquiring. Mm-hmm. If we look to incorporate something new, or we're looking to build a new product, it would always go under a new brand. Mm-hmm. So the idea we have with it is, you know, we always talk, like I said, with our merchants, what do you guys need? Where are we going next? Once we have a strong pool of clients that are, you know, focusing on a certain jurisdiction or a certain payment method, then we put our resources into that. So it's kind of, you know, like I said, in the trenches research, you know, how many of you guys are needing this? And, you know, we have quite a large group of clients already. So if we have like 20% that require a certain solution, then we will put the resources in, we'll put the research in to find out how we can migrate that into our services, create a new brand around it, and then offer that service.
Oh, interesting. I mean, you merchants you mentioned, how often do you go out and talk to them?
Sure. So we have dedicated sales teams in the field, we say, here in Cyprus.
Yeah.
These are the Cypriot base. So if we say we have, I don't know, 2,000 clients in the moment, around 50% are Cyprus-based. The rest are global. So obviously we can't meet with them. Mm. But we have, you know, our targeted sales teams that need to be on sales calls with these guys, or maintenance account management calls via Zoom or Skype or even WhatsApp. But, you know, we talk to our clients the majority every single day, or we focus role how we speak to our clients. So we have our top tier clients that don't really need too much management. Mm. We have our newer clients, our more startup clients, which also, you know, they need our advice on also what to do. So rather than us constantly, how we can say, poking them, you know, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? It's more about consulting them also. So this is how we stay in touch.
Very interesting. It's important to always stay in touch and always be building those relationships, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, as we, I guess, move forward, start looking at different parts of what's happening in, you know, not just in the fintech world, but also from a global perspective and, you know, an economic perspective. Are you guys thinking or hypothesizing about the future and what the future market conditions look like, and maybe looking at it from that perspective, launching products off the back of that? Or is it very much, again, talking to the customers and getting feedback that way?
I think we could probably say it's a mixture of both. So there's only a certain level of information you can get from a pre-existing customer, Richard. Mm. So it's like,
yeah,
it's a very easy way to get to market when the client is telling you, guys, we need this, can you give it to us? Mm. But then when you look on a global scale, especially with the current situation, you know, just there's so much volatility and there's no stability in what you can and can't do. So I think it's a case of, you know, doing deeper research. I think it's in payments, you do have the ability to kind of rocket from the beginning to something great, because there's so many providers that you can plug into. But I think if you're going long term, let's say into, you know, trying to build a brand around a niche, you know, you could focus on your initial clients, but then you have to start looking further around and, you know, internationally. And with the situation with, you know, constant volatility and regulations changing and banks coming up, banks going down, I mean, it's kind of like it's a gamble, right? It's just guesswork. How do you go to certain places? And again, it's just, you know, how much are you willing to put into it, and how much are you expecting to get out of it? Is it something that you want to do brand awareness about and build a brand out of it? Are you trying to add value to it, or is it going to be a cash cow? I don't know. For us, you know, when we discuss moving forward, the main thing we always want to do is add value. But there is also that sense of, because of the volatility, do you want to just, you know, cash cow the process and just make as much money out of it as you can as possible, and then build value from that? It's difficult. It's a difficult place to be right now.
I hear you. I think all leaders are grappling with the same question. But as you, you know, grow and scale and different parts of your business mature and others maybe need to mature more, how do you make certain that you and your team are, you clearly communicating your vision and the way forward across your team and your companies?
Sure. So we have, you know, it's not like there's multiple offices internationally. Mm. We have a few offices and our main office is here in Cyprus.
Yeah.
But we have multiple groups. So we have like, we have our departments and we have our heads of our department. We have like a growth session once a week to find out where everybody is, what's going on, how things are going. It got a bit harder, you know, being with payments being so fast paced. And obviously we had to spend a lot of time at home and in lockdown. This kind of allowed us to research new solutions in terms of keeping ourselves going and keeping our network correct, you know, our colleague base, let's say. But we use a main app recently. I'm not sure if I can, you know, give names, but we recently integrated with a very, very cool CRM that allows us to, you know, check what everybody's doing, how things are going, delegate tasks and bring back tasks to senior management when necessary. But again, it's just communication. You know, everyone is online at a certain time. You have to be a bit more liberal with how you expect people to work. You know, everyone has their own situations at the moment and the things they need to look after. Mm. But our communication is good. And as a company, we're good. We have, you know, large groups on WhatsApp, on our Skype chats. Everyone is connected correctly.
That's interesting. And do you see it as a community? Do you look at it as your team as a community? It's something that you build in a product together. And everyone is part of the process and everyone has their role to play.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the way we wanted to build our brand wasn't just about, you know, building value to the industry or to our customers. It's also about, you know, we have a very, very strong focus on our teams. Mm. And the idea is that, you know, it might sound silly, but as a group of founders, we all agreed that we want our guys to be with us and to grow with us. You know, we don't want people who are working with us for the next 5 or 6 years. You know, if you want to go off and use your experience with us and use your understanding of the industry to go and start something on your own, this has always been our ethos. Mm. And I think with that, it kind of creates a more open office environment. It makes people want to stay because it's like they're free. Once they are, they feel they want to go off and do their own thing. Mm. They know they've been, you know, they have our support with it. So I think when we're, you know, talking about the growth or, you know, the community in our offices, absolutely. You know, it's a very, we say we're a family, you know, it's not so much about business. Mm. As long as everybody's doing what they're expected to do and we're all growing together and we're all working for the bigger picture, everybody's good. You know, we have it down to a level. I think especially here in Cyprus, where the younger generation, you know, their parents are coming from a work environment where it is very much you have your boss and you go to work. Now with the rise of fintech and the rise of the, you know, the forex entities and brands in Cyprus, where it's more, I don't know, let's say European, more US in terms of how things are run, and it's more friendly and fun and it's more, you know, it's a nice place to be. We wanted to follow suit. You know, we didn't want to be a typical Cypriot company where you have, you know, people come to work at a certain time, you have your lunch breaks at a certain time. It's a very, very open office. Everyone is very, you know, committed to what they do. And I think that's why, you know, we kind of changed the environment from what they expected to be. And I think the shock factor of coming to work, you know, is like, well, okay, I want to be here. Everyone cares about us and our growth. And it's, you know, the bigger picture works.
So that's interesting. I don't know how many companies in Cyprus have those ethos, but my assumption is you are pulling in quite the really good talents. You're drawing them in because of your philosophy and your culture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the main companies that have this ethos are in Limassol and we're based in Larnaca. Mm. So, you know, Larnaca is more traditional in terms of its workspace. It has very, very old companies there. And so the guys kind of grown up in Larnaca have that kind of choice. It's either that or drive to Limassol every day. Okay, it's not far. I'm not sure much you know Cyprus. But essentially, yeah, I mean, you know, when people come to us and they come for their interviews and they see how we are there, you know, okay, we are a professional environment. We're a financial services company. We're not a, you know, it's not a game. We have, you know, people's money at hand and we need to be professional with it. But yeah, in terms of how we work with our team and how we expect them to grow and, you know, in order for them to grow, they grow our company. The connection is very, very good. And we keep that very, very open.
Cool. And as you move forward, you as a senior management team, what factors are you looking at and questions are you asking yourselves to, you know, take you to the next level, to continue on that growth trajectory?
First thing first is always, where does the value come from? So it's like, you know, we don't want to be in a situation where we're throwing funds away and, you know, off the shelf ideas. We always research into things, but the main thing for us is always, where is the value? Because you can come up with a very, very good solution which lasts 2 or 3 months in payments and that's it. For us is, you know, is where's the long-term strategy of moving forward? How do we add value to our client base and add value to our potential clients? with a new project and a new service. Over the next 12 months, we're looking to expand into the African market, into the Asian market with local methods there. And this is just an example. So a case for us is, you know, how do we link the regulatory requirements of being able to offer these solutions and then offering, you know, the value requirement to our clients? This is always, you know, we have a legal responsibility to how we move forward. But on the side of it is always, you know, how do we create something special and create something that can be mass adopted very, very quickly? But at the same time, make sure that it is something long term. It's not something that's going to last 2 or 3 months or even a year and then suddenly it's been shut down. And this is the fact, you know, of most payments companies. Everyone can launch a new service very, very quickly. It's the longevity of that service that we always look at, and how much, you know, if it is a finite amount of time that we have with this particular service, how much value can we add in the short term to our customer base?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, I know you've got multiple businesses. You know, we always look to continuously evolve and continuously learn. So what books are you reading right now, or what books have you read in the recent past that you think the community would or should look at?
Sure. So my all-time favorite is Robert Kiyosaki. It was one of the first books I ever read. Rich Dad Poor Dad, I'm not sure if you know it. I haven't only read the summary version, the updated summary version. But I think, you know, the key to that book is just understanding. You should have some basic knowledge. You only need basic knowledge, which of, you know, of business. You don't need to be a business tycoon to understand what's being said in there.
Yeah.
But that was my go-to book with it. My other go-to book by Howard Bloom was The Lucifer Principle. It's a very, very big book. It's huge. And it takes a long time to read it. And I think it's something, because it's the way it's written isn't something like that you read every single day or you'd understand every single day. It does take a little while to read it. I think it took me about 3 weeks to read it. But essentially, it describes, you know, the human nature and that, you know, negativity and positivity do go hand in hand. And I think that does come into business, you know, into play in business a lot. It has helped me a lot of understanding, you know, that business is a different playing field to life. I was just able to read that. It's a great, great book. It's also available, you know, in audiobooks if you haven't got time to read at night. But going on to audiobooks, I came across Brian Tracy recently on YouTube. I was looking for, you know, some information. And I was reading one of his, you know, speeches. And I downloaded an audiobook, The Psychology of Selling. And I'm into that at the moment. And that's pretty cool. So I don't know if you read it, but it's got some really good information there. And I think when you're kind of, I'm not there yet, but I think for more seasoned professionals, you know, people who've been doing this for a number of years, I don't think it has that much value. But for someone like me and for younger entrepreneurs who, you know, are coming into it and have this understanding of how selling should be done, which is, you know, I suppose from anyone's point of view, canvassing, let's call it, or cold calling. I mean, for me, it was more, well, okay, so I don't have to be like this. And maybe I can try to change this way of doing things and be more customer centric in terms of how the sales team is being told to sell. And yeah, it's a great book, The Psychology of Selling. It's definitely a great book. I haven't finished. I'm only around, I don't know, 30% of the way through it, but it's a fantastic book.
Awesome. Some good tips then. Listen, as we finish up, I mean, how can people find and connect with you guys?
Sure. So we're available on LinkedIn, totally. We're all open on LinkedIn. We have Instagram accounts. We have our Twitter accounts. We have our Facebook accounts. If anyone wants to get involved with us, the main point of call usually is me directly on LinkedIn. I'll have an open account. You can contact me whenever you like, message me whenever you like. Our website's already available with contact us buttons. Anyone who's interested in talking further or, you know, for collaborations, we're there. We're always there. I always pick up the phone. I'm always available. I'm on WhatsApp pretty much, you know, 25/8. Anybody wants to get in touch with us, we're always open for talking.
Oh, super. I mean, thanks so much for taking time today. I mean, it's been really fascinating getting a glimpse into your world.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having us.